This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. In 1914, British explorer Sir Ernest Shackleton embarked for the South Pole. After being stranded on an island, he and five of his crew made an 800-mile voyage across the treacherous Southern Ocean to South Georgia Island, then climbed over mountains to reach a whaling station and aid, ultimately rescuing the remaining crew members left stranded. In the winter of 2013, Tim Jarvis, one of the world's contemporary leading explorers, set out to reenact Shackleton's journey. He talked with Mark Prezel about his book detailing his adventure, Chasing Shackleton, Recreating the World's Greatest Journey of Survival.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today, Tim. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, Mark.
Well, 100 years ago, Ernest Shackleton set out hoping to make the first land crossing of Antarctica. Please share the story of what Sir Edmund Hillary called the greatest survival story of all time.
Yes, that's right. He did. The Shackleton's goal was to actually cross Antarctica from one side to the other, in so doing eclipsing what Scott and Amundsen had been managed to achieve, which is to reach the South Pole, which is effectively in the middle of Antarctica. Unfortunately, Shackleton's ship, the Endurance, was crushed in pack ice. In about 5,000 feet of water down she went, leaving Shackleton and his 27 men abandoned on the pack ice, surviving under their three upturned boats. When the pack ice finally broke up, they paddled those boats from where the ship had gone down to a place called Elephant Island, just off the Antarctic Peninsula. There, Shackleton left 22 of his men, and he headed off across the ocean in the most seaworthy of the three 23-foot rowboats with five of the strongest men, and reached another remote island, South Georgia, where he raised the alarm and ultimately saved everybody.
What was interesting about this story, and what I love about the book and no doubt the documentary as well, is the fact that there are photographs documenting all these struggles that have survived and allowed Shackleton to share his story with the world.
That's right. I mean, the photographs were taken by Frank Hurley, the photographer, who, using really very primitive photographic equipment by modern standards 100 years ago, managed to capture these amazing images of the ship in its final death throes before it went down. And, of course, life on the pack ice for the men under the three upturned boats. What he didn't manage to capture was the journey that we've done, which is the journey that Shackleton undertook in the small rowboat across the Southern Ocean, going off in a bid to rescue all of those 22 men left behind, because, of course, the photographer was one of the 22 left on the island.
It's amazing to think about the technology, or lack thereof, that Shackleton had 100 years ago, and facing those harsh conditions in Antarctica.
That's right. I mean, he'd intended to go across Antarctica from one side to the other on foot, and he had, leather boots and woolens for thermal layers, and of course the top layers were something called Burberry. They were Burberry these days, of course, make very expensive tartan-lined handbags and trench coats and that sort of thing. But in the old days, they made the Gore-Tex, effectively the Gore-Tex of the period, windproof layers, which were very breathable. Great for crossing Antarctica, which is extremely dry, where wind is your biggest problem, but no use whatsoever for an open boat journey like the one he did and the one we did, where waves are crashing in, the temperature of the water is around, freezing, and, the clothing is woefully inadequate.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Tim, about your fascination with Antarctica. You're an explorer. You hold the record for the fastest unsupported journey to the South Pole, the longest unsupported journey in Antarctica. And right on the first page of the book, you write, "I'd seen my fingers blackened by frostbite, experienced temperatures so low that three of my metal fillings contracted and fell out, requiring self-administered dental repairs. I lost 20% of my body weight, eaten a sickness-inducing 7,200 calories of lard and olive oil each day, and written, that was the toughest day of my life in my diary, 17 consecutive days." Why did you want to go back, Tim? And what is your fascination with the polar regions?
I ask myself the same question sometimes, but, I think life is short, and I think it's about trying to discover more about the meaning of everything, about your place in the scheme of things, and a bit more about who you are. And I think I go to the remotest places simply because they strip back all of the noise of society. There's no radio, there's no corner shops, there's no friendly friendly faces out there to motivate you. There's no greenery in places like Antarctica. You just go there and you will perform if you can summon up the resolve from within yourself. And it's amazing when you dig deep what you discover about yourself. And I just enjoy the process of self-discovery, I suppose, that I go on when I go to these remotest of places. The irony is you have to go to the remotest places in the world just to discover what's inside you.
To know that Shackleton, you know, had this endured this type of suffering as well, but with I'll go back. I guess I'm a little bit of a technology weenie when it comes to camping and the like. And to think about the primitive nature of the supplies that he had, I wonder why he was motivated to do that.
You know, he was a great romantic, Shackleton. He was really quite a poet, and he wrote of you know, trying to delve into. You know, some sort of meaning behind our mortal existence. And I suppose he was of a religious persuasion too, but he very much was fascinated by the idea of going to these places to discover about himself too. I think his reasons were kind of consistent with the reason why I do things, and I know a number of the other guys on the expedition team share those views. Really, to go there just to see a bit more about what it's all about, to see what you discover. He said, you know, we have seen God in his splendors, heard the text that nature renders, we had reached the naked soul of man, was what he wrote in his diary upon surviving this journey. Very poetic stuff, and really trying to capture the essence of what it was to, you know, delve a little bit deeper.
Speaking with Tim Jarvis, an explorer who retraced for the first time the legendary 1914 expedition of Sir Ernest Shackleton, in Antarctica. It's part of a book called Chasing Shackleton and the PBS documentary that debuts beginning tomorrow night on PBS. And Tim, I wanted to ask about the boat that you recreated, the boat that was a recreation of the one that Shackleton and five other men took on that 800-mile journey in the South Seas around Antarctica. It's not that large a vessel there.
No, it's a very unseaworthy vessel, really. I mean, it was essentially one of the three lifeboats from the big ship that sank. These things are 23 foot long, just under 23 foot, and, you know, they have no keel. They're just a rowboat, essentially. And the Southern Ocean is the roughest ocean in the world. So, really, as far as Shackleton was concerned, the journey was one taken through absolute necessity, because he felt that nobody was going to come and discover or rescue his men left behind on Elephant Island unless he actually went off and tried to raise the alarm. So he undertook the journey out of absolute desperation. And, you know, we were very cognizant of that when we did our expedition, I can tell you.
I was amused as I read your account to hear once the boat went out to sea that all the crew, well, due to the keelless nature of the boat and the fact that it's just a rowboat and rolling around, seasickness was a serious concern for a lot of the time.
Oh, it really was. I mean, you can imagine this boat, if you'd stepped onto it from just the quayside in a harbor, the whole thing would have, you know, really leaned over heavily to one side. That's just the way one person stepping onto the boat. Very, very unstable indeed. And, you know, you can imagine 30, 40, 50-foot waves down in the Southern Ocean in such a boat, and just how much rolling around there was. The only consolation, I guess, was that we were all living, there were six men on board this boat, living in the space about the size of a queen-size double bed, except we slept on rocks, and we used reindeer skin sleeping bags to keep us warm. And so there wasn't really far for us to fall. We were so tightly wedged in like sardines that at least it prevented serious injury.
You were all one with the boat, I suppose.
We really were, you know. But you're absolutely right. Seasickness was high on the list, unfortunately, and not helped by the food that we ate, which was essentially lard. We ate a lot of the old expedition rations, which essentially was just congealed animal fat with a bit of seasoning in it to give you the energy to withstand the cold.
What was more difficult, recreating the boat or recruiting the people to sail in that boat?
Well, I think it's interesting. The boat, the original boat, actually exists. It's at Shackleton School, And so getting permission to actually go and measure that took us about a year to get that permission. In terms of getting the five guys to join me on this slightly crazy expedition, it's amazing how many people came forward when I told them that it was an extremely dangerous journey. We were going to do things as Shackleton had, in a keelless boat, big ocean, old clothes, old food, traditional navigation. And I got 200 applications for five places. So it would seem that even though the explorers of old were iron men traveling in wooden boats, that the modern day people can still summon up a bit of resolve and a bit of endurance and still achieve on the biggest of scales too.
Well, from reading the book, it seems you had a lot of pressure balancing the trip and the recreation of the trip and the film crew that came along too, balancing the necessity for the documentation with your efforts to recreate Shackleton as originally as you could.
Yes, that's right. I mean, viewers will see when they watch the film that, of course, it's filmed as a documentary. But on board the boat, we were okay because, of course, the cameras that filmed us were all fixed cameras that just filmed continuously. We had six cameras that ran continuously, and we had a bank of batteries, which was some of the ballast for the boat. We substituted some of the rocks that Shackleton had put in the bottom of the boat for camera batteries of the same weight. And so there was no cameraman filming us then. But before we started the expedition, there were a lot of problems with the film crew, making unreasonable demands on us, as we felt. And also when we reached South Georgia Island, again, we were brought into contact with the film crew. And, you know, their goals were not always the same as ours. They wanted us to show a lot of emotion and maybe panic a little bit and that sort of thing, whereas we were all very, very determined to do this thing. And I think a lot of that edginess and tension between the two is really fascinating in the film, if I could say that.
Well, Tim, we've been talking about the 800-mile boat trip that Shackleton took, but that was only half of the voyage. This is what they called a Shackleton double. And once Shackleton did make it to South Georgia, well, the trek wasn't over there.
That's right. No, he had to land on South Georgia. I mean, the South Georgia is a jagged, rocky island sticking out of an extremely rough ocean. And the cliffs are 600 feet high. There's a lot of uncharted rocks. It's extremely dangerous. You have a very big sea basically trying to throw you onto those rocks. And in a small keelless boat like ours, it's very, very difficult to navigate because, you know, the ocean takes you any which way it wants because you don't have a keel. You don't have anything to actually lock you into position in the water, sticking down into the water, and you get pushed sideways very easily. So we managed to land. We found that three of the six guys had extremely bad feet. They had something called trench foot, which is like frostbite, where the toes are completely numb and without circulation. And those three guys were unable to continue. And in fact, it was the other three of us who managed to do the crossing very heavily crevassed terrain and going through very steep mountains with frankly terrible weather to reach the whaling station on the far side.
Preview a little bit about the documentary, how it's in three parts. How did you break up those parts in telling the tale of chasing Shackleton?
I think very generally speaking, the three parts are the build-up to the expedition and the sea trialing and some of the drama that goes on at the beginning through to the start of the boat journey. That's the first episode. The second episode is the boat journey itself, the second bit of the boat journey, I suppose. And the third bit is the crossing of the mountains of South Georgia, which were really very, very dangerous. We had about 20 crevasse falls between us. The cameramen that rendezvoused with us on South Georgia, the Discovery Channel cameramen, in fact, both backed out, one with an injury and the other one deciding that he felt the conditions were perhaps a bit dangerous for him. And, in fact, just the three of us went on our own with just the same meager equipment that Shackleton had to do the crossing, leather boots with screws pushed through the soles just to give us grip, and crossing very, very dangerous terrain.
Well, you were talking about the build-up to the expedition, and it was heartwarming to see how Shackleton has influenced people even here 100 years later, because you speak about how many volunteers show up, and when asked why they were there to help, they said, Shackleton.
It's incredible, the legacy of the man. I mean, he's taught now at so many of the leading management schools globally because of his incredible leadership, never asking others to do anything that he wasn't prepared to do himself, always putting everybody else's livelihood ahead of his. His ability to manage problems, take problems in his stride, to change and adapt to the changing circumstances that he was faced with all the time, always improvising on the run, and always with a vision of how they might achieve their ultimate goal in originally crossing Antarctica and then saving themselves. He was one of these fantastic leaders, and he instilled such a sense of loyalty in people, and that loyalty extends to this day to people who didn't even know him, but that really admire what he stood for.
Well, thinking back and you know, knowing this story and this three-year tale of survival, I have to agree with Edmund Hillary and, you know, is calling the world's greatest journey of survival. Do you think Shackleton could have made that land crossing of Antarctica back in 1914 had his plans gone well?
That's a very, very good question, and not one that people often ask. It was a very ambitious plan. It was 1,800 miles across some very inhospitable, very high-altitude terrain with a lot of danger, using the equipment of the period and the navigation of the period to find the caches of food that were going to be left for them to pick up on their way across. I think the jury is really out as to whether or not they would have made it. Had they done so, they would have achieved something, many, many years ahead of its time. It took till the 1950s before that journey was able to be achieved with motorized vehicles by, again, Edmund Hillary and Sir John Hunt, the team that tackled Mount Everest successfully. I really don't know what the answer to that one is. I would love to think they could have made it, a bit like Mallory having first summited Everest, even though we don't know whether he did make it. But I just don't know.
Well, was there a point any time where things got serious or dangerous enough to the point that you thought about stopping, that someone might get hurt, you know, that the documentary couldn't happen, that the colleagues that you were traveling with, for their benefit, you shouldn't continue?
We never thought about stopping. For a start, had we stopped, there wasn't really anywhere for us to go. The nearest point of land from Antarctica is South Georgia. Thereafter, you've only really got South Africa, which is another almost 3,000 miles further on, or you can try and head back into the wind and the current to try and reach South America, which under sail power in a boat like ours you would never achieve, which is why Shackleton never attempted it 100 years ago. He knew that he would never be able to sail into the wind and the current. So I think we decided that had anybody fallen overboard, and obviously in that situation there would have been no hope of rescue, I'm afraid, we would have continued. We would have continued on to South Georgia. We all agreed that that was the ultimate goal. Had somebody not made it, we felt that, you know, we wouldn't have wanted their loss to have been completely in vain, as corny as that may sound. And frankly, South Georgia was the nearest place to get to in that ocean, so it's not a case of you having really very much choice. So I think we would have continued on.
Well, what is next, Tim? Or is it time for a bit of a rest? I know you have family and kids. You mentioned them a number of times in the book. You know, what is your next adventure? Are you going to rest on your laurels for a little while?
I'm not someone who rests on their laurels for very long. I find it.
I don't think so.
I really enjoy this resourceful part of me that comes out when I put myself in these difficult situations, and so I suppose I'm a glutton for punishment. But yes, I have plans to go around the equator and do some mountaineering there. I think I'm quite happy to stay out of small boats for a while. Something a bit warmer that doesn't involve surviving on the Southern Ocean, I think, will be fine.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today, Tim. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Really enjoyed it.
Explorer Tim Jarvis talking with WVXU's Mark Purcell about his book detailing his latest adventure, Chasing Shackleton, recreating the world's greatest journey of survival. A three-part documentary commemorating the 100th anniversary of Shackleton's original expedition begins tomorrow night on PBS. You can find links to this Shackleton story interview at WVXU.org. If you were listening earlier to our Film Commission interview, you also can find links to that interview as well as links to what it takes to be an extra or be involved in the Film Commission. Go to our website, WVXU.org, and all of it's there. Go to the Cincinnati Edition link, and you'll find links to all of our programs. You can hear Cincinnati Edition weekdays between 1 and 2 here on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati and 88.5 WMUB Oxford.